Vajrabhati, Vajramind. Greetings, and as always, thank you so much for listening to our show. We have an awesome one for you today. We had the pleasure of being joined by Terry Patton. And for those of you who don't know who Terry is, got a little intro for him here. Terry speaks and consults internationally, inspiring, challenging, and connecting leaders and institutions worldwide. He has worked for over 3 decades as a philosopher, activist, coach, and teacher. He worked with Ken Wilber and a core team at Integral Institute as a senior writer and co-author of Integral Life Practice, which distills ancient and modern practices into a contemporary transformational lifestyle. Terry created the acclaimed 8-session online course, Integral Spiritual Practice, and is the host of Beyond Awakening, The Future of Spiritual Practice, an influential international online teleseminar series which asks one key question: how can higher human consciousness enable human beings to rise to the challenge of our current pressing crisis? It's a big question. Terry is a member of Deepak Chopra's Evolutionary Leaders Group, a member of the editorial board of the Journal of Integral Theory and Practice, and serves on the board of the Wellsprings Institute for Neuroscience and Contemplative Wisdom. And all of those courses and institutions and books can be found on his website, which is Terry Patton, patten.com, terrypatton.com. And as for our conversation, I felt like we eventually dropped into a great zone. We asked questions and shared experiences like we always do, but that landed us on the importance of gratitude, like the different styles and approaches to it. And it was very helpful for me. I went on a vacation with my parents this last weekend, and visiting my parents, interacting with them, always brings up some very interesting triggers in me. And, you know, after our conversation with Terry, I felt like I got a great transmission, one that was very calm and filled with gratitude, and I was able to take that into my interactions, and things just went very, very well. It wasn't absent of challenges or anything like that, but it was just, you know, coming from a place that was a little bit new for me, and so, you know, for that, I really appreciate it. Terry has a poetic yet tangible way of speaking to that which is mystical and mundane. And while I was setting up, and just for clarification purposes, I had brought up the topic of the Supreme Court decision on same-sex marriage, and that is where our conversation began. So I hope that you enjoy the show that we have for today. As you'll hear in the podcast, towards the end, Terry's offering a free course. And there's a website for that, which is freecourseterrypatton.com. And I'll be sure to include that in our notes. I just signed up for it, and I'm looking forward to the information that's available. It's just the course has got some really awesome topics that are very fascinating to me. It's the title of the course here is Befriending Your Overstimulated Brain, How to Navigate Our Addiction to Supernormal Stimuli. So that sounds pretty awesome to me. So without further ado, here is our show. Thank you so much. So how about that Supreme Court decision today, Terry?
Yeah. Well, it's a good thing more than anything else. There's a little bit of a complication when you've got, you know, 15 states with a whole bunch of people who are going to feel like they're being railroaded, you know, and the way those backlash dynamics work is a complex thing. And, you know, to some degree, the gridlock we've got in the Congress is sort of due to a Supreme Court, you know, finding on busing years ago and the way that cemented the Southern strategy and the Republican hold on things. So I've always can appreciate the mixed blessing that every step of progress is.
But of course.
I'm really happy that, you know, there's an awful lot of people that are getting legitimized, and that's the thing to celebrate.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that that's kind of a perfect conversation leap into, because Terry, the way that I found your work is through Integral, And, you know, it's been just the most valuable philosophical, intellectual tool that I've come across to make sure and check and balance my spiritual, philosophical, and all other dimensions experience. And just in the way that you responded to the kind of news that we had today, that on the one side sounds like all good news, is often leaving out kind of these other perspectives that we just tend to suppress as we grow. And there's a tendency to turn them into, you know, repressed material that we don't acknowledge, and therefore we bypass people, we bypass ourselves, and we don't have a complete perspective on life. And so I think that that's a very interesting topic to kind of spin off of, and how you approach spiritual teaching. So maybe you could say just a few words about how the integral approach has, you know, influenced and colored the way that you approach spiritual practice in general, and a whole life practice in particular.
Sure. Well, you know, integral is an interesting word, because it has to do with wholeness more than anything else, but also parts. You know, it relates to words like integer, which connote, you know, wholeness, integrity, which has to do with being whole and complete, but also words like integration, which have to do with including all the parts in a right relationship to each other. And when a new part is integrated, the whole is changed, because it is integrated. There's an integral wholeness that acknowledges all the parts of a whole. And so there are, you know, the way that I've become an integral teacher is through my work with Ken Wilber and his remarkable Aqual Integral Theory, which has convened a community of people who've really had a psychoactive awakening of their consciousness through seeing his key distinctions. There are people on every continent except maybe Antarctica who are really turned on by this. It can be really life-changing, and so I'm very grateful to that. But I see integral as a principle, and that even integral philosophy is alive and growing and always becoming more integral. So rather than integral being a static thing or a school or a movement, I see it as a principle. It's about the inherent wholeness of things, always advancing and helping fragmentation and disconnection to be subsumed into, you know, wholeness reasserts itself, and so things evolve. And the way that expresses itself in terms of practice, which is what I specialize in, is a practice that recognizes that, you know, physical practices and subtle energy practices and spiritual practices and you know, but also even diet and sleep practices having to do with your inner psyche, shadow work, emotional work, mental practice, coming to understand the world more clearly, but also to free up your mind so that you can more flexibly take perspectives. That all these are aspects of a single thing, which is truly integral. And so I wrote a book with Ken on practice, and two colleagues, Marco Morelli and Adam Leonard, Integral Life Practice. And I've been teaching that more than, you know, that's kind of been the centerpiece of the teaching work I've been doing for the last decade or more. I also see that practice as being truly integral, which means that it includes relating to our world, that there's a certain social responsibility that we have as citizens of a world out of balance. And our internal practice, it's not just about making us more whole and complete and better, more functional, more awake, but it is also about our responsible participation in our culture, which is itself evolving. So an aspect of the inner work is the outer work, and the responsibility we have to be a force for the awakening and transformation and health and wholeness of our social and cultural world, which is, you know, a very pointed thing right now in our time of global warming and the breakdown of institutions all over the world. So there's a wholeness to the view in which, you know, you really get to see everything's connected to everything else, and the more you wake up, the less disconnected, the less estranged, the less fragmented from any other part of this holistic universe you can be.
Nice. And so in our country, where do you, what area do you think that we need the most development right now?
You know, that there are, that's a funny question, because anyone hearing these words, I would hope, would pay attention to their own incomplete integrity and incomplete authenticity. I have been very sincerely doing the deepest work I can toward my own wholeness, and the more whole I become, the more authentic I become about my own inauthenticities, the more willing I am to see the subtle ways that I lack integrity. And so that is something, it's a mountain that has no top, as Werner Erhard likes to say. Integrity really is a project that we will be working on our whole lives. So I hope that anyone hearing these words will immediately look at their own integrity as the point, their own authenticity as the point. But there are some pretty important social and cultural issues. I think that the big issue of our day, of course, is climate change. It's the fact that, you know, the greenhouse effect is already changing world weather, and that we might be seeing, you know, some pretty significant rises of sea levels, and that we don't seem to be able to come together as a country and actually proactively solve any problems. I mean, we've got a breakdown of our political, but also our social institutions. And I think that the way that expresses itself is for us to really care, to not tune away, to actually face into it, and to deepen. Not, you know, like it's a koan. It's an impossible question, like a Japanese koan, that demands an answer that can't simply be answered in your current mind, and that will transform your consciousness if you give yourself to that question, and in the process, you know, you will be transformed. And here it is that we're all facing our world situation. It is a completely disorienting, impossible riddle. And for us to open to that with real passion, real care, that can draw us into a kind of intimacy with each other, intimacy with ourselves, and honesty and authenticity that is exactly what's needed.
Well, and I think that that's so important. And I want to highlight one thing that I think is a huge problem that maybe you could address a little further, and that is the myth of perfection. And this, especially in spiritual communities, there's this tendency to believe that there's a finishing point, that there's some point at which we can stop dealing with things. And, you know, even though this has been talked around a fair amount in spiritual communities, it hasn't been addressed explicitly that there's this implied belief that there's a static, fixed goal that we're working towards. And maybe you could say a little bit about how you understand that and how that may or may not be incorrect.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. You know, when we first enter the path, very often the testimony of people who have really given themselves over to practice profoundly and who have awakened to states of consciousness which really do relieve their suffering and really deliver them into a kind of full peace, you know, that kind of enlightenment, it begins to seem like just like, oh, that's what I want. You know, I want, and we tend to think of it then in a kind of binary way, like I'm unenlightened, I'm feeling neurotic, I'm worried about this, I'm preoccupied with my own image or success or love or health or whatever I'm preoccupied with. And if I could just be enlightened, I would, you know, everything would be different. And that static endpoint is, there is a reality to the fact, you know, like there have been more than one points in my years of practice where everything changed. And there was before that moment in time and then after that moment in time. and I'm happier and freer and more deeply understand, you know, existence in ways I never did before on the other side of some of those passages. So there are awakenings that are not unreal. On the other hand, the awakening that I'm participating in now is one in which I keep arriving into the endlessness of awakening, into every new moment being an opportunity to learn. So the idea that one awakens and then things kind of, now you're done, you know, now you're on the other side of it, is actually a dangerous idea, because people who don't continually, humbly submit themselves into the next opening, the next learning, the next, you know, who don't have that curious, childlike, beginner's mind that allows them to discover freshly the miracle of existence in every new moment, are going to tend to, even if they have a certain kind of power and a certain kind of peace and a certain kind of clarity and depth, they're going to tend to be representing a kind of static energy that might actually tend to lead others into a kind of idealized and deluded relationship to their own path.
I'm just kind of curious then about the dangers of having that endpoint. How you came to that conclusion? Now, is this something that you found yourself in at one point and found your way out, or is it something you've observed in other practitioners?
Well, you know, I've been on the path for a really long time. And back when I began, when I was really young, it was a different era in spirituality in the West, and there was an awful lot of idealization of that static endpoint. People imagining that the enlightened one, you know, never felt even a trace of unhappiness, and that they were only love, and that they were only peace and wisdom. And, you know, I remember fantasizing that the fool on the hill, you know, had a kind of, I don't know, like some sort of holographic, I don't know, funny way that they see the world that is somehow like their visual cortex is giving them some sort of weird kaleidoscopic holographic image where they see into and beyond all things.
You know, right.
There was a lot of weird idealization of realization. And we are in a time in which Dharma is evolving. And Dharma evolved from an idealized, strict, like, consciousness without an object, kind of rigid non-dual realization. There were ideas of being the master of everything, and the world is just going to respond to your intention, and you're going to be so in sync with the subtle energies of the world. That was another myth. We're opening into an image and an understanding of enlightenment as a profound awakening of every dimension of feeling, to where we're vulnerable and we hurt with and resonate with all the pain of the world and all the joy and blessedness and freedom and love and beauty and goodness of existence, where we're not only in one state all the time, where we're alive and we're breathing and we're moving, and there are highs and there are lows, and we don't cut off the lows or the highs, in which we're unarmored and unbuffered, where our compassion and our heart are just wide open and our heart is broken, and there's that kind of letting go and a lack of self-consciousness and a given overness to in some ways they even are coincident, where there's a kind of unbuffered sensitivity to all the pain of the world that's no different from bliss and deep peace. And I think that is a new vision of enlightenment that isn't widely understood. I mean, right now we have the popularization of mindfulness, and mindfulness is a wonderful thing. I'm so glad people are meditating, and I think mindfulness is helping people function better. But I don't think that's the end of what spirituality has to offer to a more awake existence. I don't think that the levels of what are being popularized more broadly are the limit of our possibility or our aspiration.
Well, I think one thing that you said that it really just syncs up with the whole, my interest in Integral is that, you know, especially in the Aqual model, the kind of upper left interiorization and the kind of fixation on that as being spirituality has allowed for some of that hyper-mythologizing of the spiritual master who just stays in a state experience 24/7. All the while neglecting their relationships, neglecting their job, neglecting their body, you know, all kinds of fixation going on in that one quadrant that's just allowing for a neglect of all these other quadrants. And I think that that was one thing the Integral model helped bring out of spirituality was kind of this fixation. And I see, you know, with a lot of the guests we've worked with recently, like Will Johnson, there's this huge somatic emphasis being reborn, because we've recognized that most spiritual practitioners, myself included, kind of neglected our body, whether intentionally or unintentionally, or saw meditation as something separate from the body. And that has caused, I think, so much of the problems and fragmentation we see in the spiritual communities. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. I think that the process of seeing more perspectives is absolutely an expression of health. And the more perspectives that we see, the less we buy into any single perspective. We get that every perspective is both true and partial. But we can then also appreciate that each perspective has a truth, and that arriving in each perspective and pursuing it to its conclusion and really letting it reveal the truths that it reveals requires really staying with a perspective. And so that there's another level of deepening in the path where we're growing in our capacity to reside potently, intensely, like laser-like focus in one perspective, and then also to inhabit an apparently contradictory perspective simultaneously in a way that actually transforms our body mind, transforms who we are and how we are being, because we can be a paradoxical being that can hold two apparently self-contradictory truths in a greater reality. And that's actually a psychophysical transformation. There's a yoga of becoming alive, and the subtle body, actually, you know, the chakras have to open. There's a kind of conductivity of life energy that allows you to do that. And that's a little less explored, and that's even maybe a little more interesting.
Yeah, and you know, my experience with that is that on the one hand, I have experienced more opening because of my connection to taking other perspectives. But then the groundlessness that Buddhists often talk about becomes more explicit. I found that even more than I ever imagined, I can't find ground. That everything is, like you said, true and partial. So I have a very difficult time at times navigating the kind of spaciousness that allows for so many perspectives. Have you run into that at all in your path where, you know, trying to hold so many perspectives that your ego or whatever grasps for something to navigate by, but feels totally lost by the infinite number of possibilities?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's the fact is people who are really living a deep and soulful existence are embarking on an adventure. And the way that adventure has been described over the years has included dark nights of the soul, you know, real drama, real complexity, real depth. There's, you know, the divine romance, there's the hero's journey, there's death and rebirth, there are profound archetypal stories that get replayed in our lives. And this groundlessness that you're talking about, this loss of orientation, and is an expression of a kind of death and a kind of rebirth. And these enlightenment experiences are deaths, they're ego death. And there's a way that giving oneself over and allowing oneself to be subsumed The groundlessness that you're talking about can open you to a kind of freedom. You know, ultimately, this is why there's another integral principle I ought to bring forward, which is the sometimes called, Ken called it the 1-2-3 of God. I renamed it the three faces of God. That there's a first-person spirituality, like the I am-ness of consciousness itself, the mere witnessing that's only here in every now. That I am-ness is first-person spirituality. That there's a third-person spirituality, which is looking at the world as an object, as an it, and seeing the patterns that connect. And that spirituality, just even having this discussion about pointing out these different perspectives and everything else, is these are all forms of third-person. We're, you know, doing philosophy is third-person. Nature mysticism is you know, a different form of third-person spirituality. The philosophy, we look at it intuitively, and we notice the hidden patterns that connect. When we look at beautiful natural world, the qualities of light in the sky, or the arc of the bird's flight, or the graceful qualities of the trees, you know, or the movement of them in the wind, we're seeing the body of God in third person. Now, second person spirituality is the more complicated one for Western people, because that involves a relationship with the mystery of existence as one's beloved, as the intimate, as a fundamental intimate other. The I-thou relationship to spirit. And we are too recently associated with prayer to a God that was a mythic God, an idea of divinity that was the product of an earlier stage of our development, where we imagined that God, you know, the God of the Christian world until even now, many, many Christians have a mythic God that they're relating to. An idea, a kind of objectification. But there's another understanding. I mean, there are many levels of understanding of divinity. And there's a transpersonal understanding, a transrational understanding of divinity that understands it as the very mystery of existence. Where you turn to God, and you're not turning to some objectified idea, you're turning to the open unknowableness of existence from which all new moments and all new emergence arise. And that open-ended mystery, you can fall in love with that open-ended mystery. You can enter into communion with that open-ended mystery. And so there's a place, I think, in the lives of most of the listeners to this podcast, for a much more profound love relationship to existence itself, a devotional awakening, a falling in love, and even a kind of relationship to grace, to the way that so many things come into being and support our existence from a source we can't even locate. So the movement among these perspectives and the enrichment of a perspective to where you're able to do practices that might be first person, second person, or third person in a way that's different because in some sense your sensibilities have been awakened to those other perspectives. That's pretty important. And so this every perspective is true but partial, can wake us up to an unconventional relationship to our moment-to-moment experience, to where this incomprehensible totality that is always going to be bigger and more profound than our local experience of it. So it's kind of like blowing the walls off of the chamber of perception and an opening into a kind of ongoing experience of awe and wonder and love as the way we're really living.
Yeah, you know, I practice in the Tibetan Buddhist lineage, and so Guru Yoga is kind of familiar to me, so we use both second and third person, and first person, really, practice in that. And I'm wondering how you offer or teach that to people, and particularly in the West? Because I know that for a lot of people, that the Guru Yoga just doesn't work. It's just too abstract, too culturally embedded, and they really can't feel into it. So I'm wondering if maybe you have some tips or ideas about how the modern Western person can connect it to a devotional relationship to experience.
Yeah. Well, one of the ways is to just notice that you are dependent on lots of things that come from an unknowable source. Like when you get into a bad mood and you just feel stuck, like you have a creative block, say writer's block, or you have a breakup in a relationship or whatever, and you're just in a dark space. And then somehow something shifts and your mood breaks. And, you know, you don't even know what it is. Sometimes you just have a sweet conversation with somebody. Maybe there's not even any, you know, there's not a business deal or a romance or anything in it. You know, nothing that you're going to get, but just somehow your spirit is touched. You don't know where it comes from. Or you're a creative artist. You don't know where your next creative brainstorm or insight or flood of, you know, whatever it is, writing or composing or, you know, maybe if you're a performer, where does the juice come from for that inspired performance? And, you know, we're all of us in a relationship to stuff that comes from we don't know where. We can say it comes from the muse. We can say it comes from grace. But it comes from somewhere. And yet, in our materialistic orientation to life, we take the attitude that we kind of hope that those things will come, and we try to get lucky, and we try to have a kind of positive, productive attitude that's going to make us likely to...
You're going
to
manifest it.
Yeah, for it to manifest. But why is it that we take the attitude that it ought to come, that we ought to take it all for granted? Like, what if all of that, in some sense, in a real sense, is coming to you from a source that you ought to be grateful for? Like, maybe every time my mood shifts, I ought to be grateful. Maybe every time I have a creative idea, I ought to be grateful. Maybe every time I get a second wind when I'm running, I ought to be grateful. Maybe every time I get into the zone, if I'm doing an athletic event, that ought to be a source of grace. Why should I relate to all of it as if it's something I can engineer and I am at cause?
Yeah.
Because it's obvious I'm not at cause. And if that gratitude can begin to enter in, maybe I can begin to live my life from a place that's, in a sense, prayerful. Like I can be opening into that mysterious source of all that grace, to in relation to which I'm already grateful, with an attitude of, yes, please, you know, please give me the courage. Please give me the clarity. Please give me the insight. Please give me the humility. Please give me the honesty, the willingness to get off it. That attitude is a devotional attitude that is completely consistent with, you know, it meets the standards of my inner atheist.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's absolutely huge. And the thing I've noticed in myself, gratitude's really something I have to work at. Because it's like I pray and I hope and I'm sad that things aren't right. But then when they are right, I just kind of take it for granted. And then when they aren't right again, I pray and I hope and I'm sad. And the lack of gratitude just doubles my depression, doubles my anxiety, and makes everything so much harder.
Well, you know, you can't gin up that gratitude like, I should feel grateful. I will try to feel grateful. It doesn't get me there. I have to actually recognize the reality of my situation and notice how much of a beneficiary I am of all kinds of graceful intrusions, you know, graceful gifts that are coming into my life. And then recognizing that, like, my gratitude is the natural response when I'm awake. Mm. And there's a waking up into a living relationship to the actuality of my experience that is the source of a kind of I don't know, it's like, it's not a, I'm not ginning up gratitude like I'm trying to generate the right attitude. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally recognize what you mean. It's a, we're ignoring that there's these big channels of energy flowing into us and only paying attention to, you know, kind of output and then like hoping that it comes to us. But then when it actually comes to us, you know, the waitress brings us a glass of water or, you know, we have the garbage man take our garbage away. We just don't even notice. We're not paying attention to the fact that there's so much going on to support our existence continuously.
Yeah. I mean, really, there are so many, there's such a symphony of forces that are supporting us in the form of people who are, you know, serving vital functions for our lives, like you mentioned, but also just the, you know, the quality of the air and the light in the early morning, you know, the quality of the way the trees move in the wind, you know, the qualities of light in the sky. If we're really awake to the miracle of existence, gratitude is a big important dimension. And there's an interesting territory. These qualities of feeling are very important, because when we're deadened, it's a deadening of feeling. It's a numbing of the feeling being. My teacher used to make the point that ego is not an entity. Ego is an activity, a present activity. And that activity is an emotional problem. Mm-hmm. That there is a way that if we can't participate in a feeling process in which qualities like wonder, awe, gratitude, generosity, care, appreciation, feeling qualities reawaken. These are essential to sanity. Your mental clarity is important, but if the feeling field is arid and deadened, it doesn't really, you know, in a way, the prayer that I have, you know, when I'm not feeling gratitude, and sometimes it's just to reawaken my heart so that I can, to awaken my care for myself, to awaken my simple appreciation for all the things that I'm tending to take for granted. That reawakening, that dimension of second person spirituality it's the underemphasized elephant in the living room. Because what's your spirituality worth if you don't love? Do you really feel inspired by the spiritual attainment of somebody if you don't feel a quality of fundamental love from their being?
No.
Not really.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I've been kind of battling with what we're talking about a little bit and kind of wondering why I've been feeling stuck and not appreciating the things that are around. And unfortunately, a couple of days ago, a good friend of mine's wife passed away unexpectedly. Mm. And that really shook my system. And putting myself in his situation and realizing, what if that would have been me also, and where I was in my mind, I would have been, you know, feeling very, I would have felt absent, and then having, you know, my wife pass away, just would have been like, wow, would have been filled with deep regret that I hadn't been living more in the moment and grateful for all the wonderful things, instead of focusing so much on what I'd like to have changed and you know, collapsing on that sort of stuff. So, you know, that's kind of what I'm getting from listening to this.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for reflecting honestly and deeply.
Yeah, I find the same thing, that, you know, that self-contraction that we do constantly is numbness, and there's a weird attachment to emptiness that can masquerade as spiritual awakening, and it snuck into my path more than a few times. Just this kind of deadening of experience for a while feels powerful, for a while feels free, but ends up feeling dead. And it's been sneaky more than once. And, you know, in now training in the Tibetan tradition, they're always warning against it. You know, bodhicitta's like, beat over your head, you know, don't forget this, because it's going to cause you huge problems if you do. And it's so easy to slip into the nihilism that can come about through a overemphasis of emptiness and a lack of appreciation, gratitude, feeling, sensation, and love. It really has to be nurtured.
Yeah. Well, you know, that bubbly, joyous sweetness and happiness that you always feel around His Holiness the Dalai Lama is a beautiful icon for the quality that is, you know, missing when someone is in that kind of abstracted, absolute bodhicitta orientation. You know, the awakened awareness is absolutely wonderful, but, you know, the process of awakening is so alive. Like, this moment, as soon as we wake up into it, is gone, and then the next moment, and it has, each moment has a living quality. This, there is an absolute truth that is unchanging, but it's showing up in each new moment in a very alive way. And to be rightly related to it is to find your way into beginner's mind, into a sense of wonder. And it's always alive. It's not like that sense of wonder is something I then know. My memory of the mystery, my memory of that sense of wonder, my memory of that divine quality and or that feeling of gratitude are no substitute for the fresh, original discovery of it in the next new moment. Mm-hmm. And so there's no, you know, life is performance art. It's improv. It's show up, and who knows? And trusting yourself, trusting life, trusting the dance, and being willing to give yourself all in to that next moment. That is the living expression of spiritual. That's what the great traditions from Tibet and Japan and India and from, you know, Jewish, Christian, Islamic, you know, every tradition is really taking us to. There's some new way of being that's wanting to find its way forward. A kind of wholeness is wanting to find its way forward through our own awakening. You can feel that there's something even deeper and bigger than your own consciousness that's trying to come forward, you know, letting it wants to be all that it can be through you and as you. And so there's an awakening coming that isn't just the reestablishment of traditional awakenings. Awakening itself is alive, and it's going to find new expressions in these next moments. And in this very next moment, it'll be different than it's ever been before. How cool is that?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I really appreciate all of these perspectives, and I found it actually tremendously helpful in this short time. And I'm wondering if maybe you just don't want to say a few things about the work you're doing today and kind of what you're offering and how you teach and how you see it as, you know, potentially unique.
Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, I there are a number of different emphases. You know, there's this book that I wrote with Ken Wilber, Integral Life Practice, which I highly recommend. And my website is just my name, terrypatton.com. I am going to offer a free course to anybody who's listening to this podcast who'd like to find out more about me. If you go to freecourse.terrypatton.com, there's a free six-part email course on dealing with supernormal stimuli, which is something I didn't talk about in this interview, but one of the really funny things about the world we're living in is that we're surfing a sea of supernormal stimuli, and essentially, not only have we evolved, but culturally we've now evolved the world that tweaks us in all kinds of ways that fool our nervous system. That's why we're always dealing with dietary problems, for example, and sexual problems, and a variety of other things. We have stimuli that we don't know how to manage. And so I've put together a course to help people understand those dynamics and relate to them in a freer way. And so I wanted to offer that to folks.
Well, thank you. And we'll put the link to that in our Facebook.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for being on, Terry. And I hope we can have you on again soon. Like I said, having a spiritual teacher with a integral perspective, I think, is incredibly valuable. And obviously your connection to that is explicit. And I really appreciate that. And I appreciate the work you've done. And I hope that if any of our listeners are interested, they'll get in touch with you through your website and check out that free course. So thanks so much.
Cool. Thanks so much. Nice talking to you guys.
You too. Yeah.
Nice talking to you.
Terrific.
All right. You have a great afternoon.
Awesome. You made it to the end of the podcast. So you see what I mean, right? You feel better now after listening to that. So I just wanted to include that if you've liked our show and, of course, some of our other shows, your ongoing support is highly appreciated and effective. We're finding out that the more likes that we get on our Facebook page and more subscribers to our iTunes and Stitcher gives us a little more credibility when it comes to approaching guests. So please, if you haven't already, like our Facebook page, subscribe on iTunes, and share with your friends or anybody that you think might enjoy the material that we talk about. Also, just feel free to drop us a line. Let us know who you might want to hear from and the things that you're liking and the things that perhaps you dislike. And also just wanted to restate Terry's website, which is terrypatton.com, and check out that free course he's got going on. You know, it's free, so take advantage of that. I think he's a great writer, and things are just, you know, very, very accurate. So check it out. All right. I think that's all I wanted to say. Till next time.